So next, meditating on extraordinary attitude. At the end of having meditated on love and compassion in this manner, you will think, alas, if these sentient beings who are attractive and pleasant to me are thus deprived of happiness and tormented by suffering, I must make them meet with happiness and I must free them from suffering. In taking upon yourself, at least in mere words, the responsibility to liberate them, your mind is trained. Although this point has already been made briefly in the context of repaying the kindness, it is shown here that the love and compassion that think how wonderful it would be if they were to meet with happiness and wonder how wonderful it would be if they were to be free from suffering. How wonderful it would be if they were to meet with happiness, and how wonderful it would be if they were to be free from suffering, are not sufficient. This is because it is shown that it is necessary to generate the love and compassion, are able to induce the thought, I myself will accomplish the happiness and benefit of sentient beings. This is not to be done just during meditation sessions, but is to be sustained continuously through remembering it during all behaviors after the sessions and so forth, as is taught in the middle stages of meditation. So, for to generate such a powerful kind of intention to take upon one the responsibility of all sentient beings upon oneself, so as I have been constantly saying, this stanza in Shantideva's Bodhisattva's Way of Life is very powerful. As long as the sentient beings remain, as long as the spirits remain, may I too remain to dispel the suffering of all sentient beings. So this word is indeed very powerful, and if you try to habituate yourself, familiarize yourself in this way of thinking, so although right now it is very feeble in power, but gradually because of habituation, indeed, that kind of powerful thinking can be accomplished. And next, training in the mind striving for enlightenment. When inspired by the steps explained so far, you see that it is necessary to become a Buddha for the welfare of others. You will also develop the wish to attain it. Nonetheless, since that in itself is not sufficient, at the beginning you should increase your faith through thinking about the good qualities of the exalted body, exalted speech, and exalted mind, and enlightened activities as they were explained before in the context of going for refuge. Then, since that faith is said to act as the basis for aspiration, you will generate the wish to attain those qualities from the bottom of your heart. That will induce certainty that the achievement of an exalted knower of all aspects is indispensable also for your own welfare. Next, the result of the training, identifying the mind generation. Then the divisions of the bodhicitta. So there are various ways of classifying the divisions. Engaging bodhisattva behavior following the Gandhavaya Sutra teaches the two. The aspiring and engaging mind generations or bodhicitta, saying, in the same way that the peculiarities of the wish to go and going are to be understood, the one should respectively understand the peculiarities of these two. If there appear to be a lot of inconsistencies in this respect, there is also the statement in the first stages of meditation that the mind that thinks, may I become a Buddha for the welfare of sentient beings, is the aspiring mind, and that having taken the vow, that mind is the engaging mind, our mind generation or the bodhicitta. So with this, we have finished with generating bodhicitta by means of the technique of the Sevenfold Course of Relationship. And next, how to train the mind through equalizing and exchanging oneself and others. It has three subdivisions. Thinking about the advantages and disadvantages of exchanging and not exchanging oneself with others. Demonstrating that one can generate this mind if one familiarizes with it. The stages of meditating on how to exchange oneself and others. So, the first one, equalizing oneself for others. So here, we have to think how all sentient beings, they are desirous of happiness and not desirous of suffering, just as you do the same. It is because of this that if you try to be biased and try to be close to some and try to be distant to some others, it should be atrocious. So all the sentient beings, they are just equal in the state that though desirous of happiness but deprived of happiness, and though undesirous of suffering, being tormented by suffering. So wherever we look, all sentient beings are being tormented by the third kind of suffering, that is the conditioned suffering. It is because of this that there is no reason why one should be close to some and distant to others. So the kind of example given is that if there are 10 people who are equally stricken by poverty, so how can you be actually close to some of the beggars and distant to the others? In a similar way, if you think of all sentient beings, so there is no, without exception, everyone is being inflicted by the conditioned suffering. So how can one really be assume an aspect of unbiasedness? So through such reflection, so you try to develop such attitude that, oh, I should be equally interested to benefit all sentient beings without making the discrimination among the sentient beings, without being prejudiced, prejudiced to some and not to others. So if you take in consideration the other sentient beings, so again they are all equal because they are all desirous. They are equally desirous of happiness and not desirous of suffering. And whereas from the point of view of yourself, so everyone has equally been your close and dear ones. All sentient beings has equally been your dear and near ones, because in the previous lifetimes, there has never been anyone who hasn't been your father or mother or close ones. And say, in this life, even if there are sentient beings who are not your father or mother, but if you reflect well, we see that either by directly or by indirect means, they are all the sentient beings. They are equally kind to you. So, if you think of this life, just imagine the food that you take, the clothing, the containers, the watches, or the cameras, and so forth, medicines, and the close ones, or the relatives, friends, and the fame. So they all come about through dependence on the sentient beings. For example, food, they are the product of the sentient beings. So when it rains, you just try to be in a house, you try to remain in a house. And whereas the farmers, So even in rain, they have to go out to work in the field. And then they have to kill many worms in order to grow the crops. And then while planting the, especially the cottons, you have to you have to put so much of insecticides. And the, if you think of the silk and silk and alike, so in order to have that, it is actually the product of killing enormous amount of worms. And you think of some of the Tibetans from Kham area or Amdo area, so they're putting on those fur, those hats made of fur, animal fur. So they are again the product of killing many animals. So we are monks, we don't have anything to put on as kind of ornaments and jewels, but for others, if you think of the jewels that they put on, so they, again, many of them, they come about through killing and the many animals. So again, if you think of the house, so those the workers, or those who construct the house, so what they do is that they are involved in the work of job of constructing the house, and as soon as the house is completed, so they go away. So and then the owner of the house comes and say that, oh, this is not well done and so forth, and then scolding, giving so much scolding to the workers. And then also think about the facilities that you're going to have in the house. So think about the kind of the, for example, the paper box. So the paper box also. So the monks, so who are less facilitated, so they would most of the time use the such kind of paper box for kind of cushion or whatever. So even with these things, there should be the hands of many people involved to make this paper box. So if you think that way, so all these things are somehow, whether directly or indirectly, connected to countlessly many sentient beings, the hands of countless many sentient beings. So for example, if you think about the watch, so if you say, oh, this watch is so beautiful, and if you kiss the watch, this watch wouldn't know how to show affection to you. But whereas if you really start petting a dog or a cat, so they actually know as to how to, they respond to you with affection. So they know how to respond with affection to you. If you show affection to them. So this kind of affection, responding with affection, cannot be done even by the diamond. But no doubt, such kind of affection can be given back to you by a dog or a small cat. But I don't know whether or not the bad bugs have the capacity to show this compassion and love back to you. So as such, this attitude of compassion, this attitude of love is something very precious. So again, when you think about fame, so if you are alone in the world, so there isn't any kind of element of fame involved, because it is actually the element is something that comes about through the involvement of someone else appreciating you, that the concept of fame comes about. Again, if you think of the same watch, so since the watch doesn't know how to show affection to you, but because that this is beneficial to you, I make sure that I keep it in a very precious way. I can cherish it. So similarly, it is not the case that whether or not the other person is of benefit to you or not, but as long as although the other person don't show any sense of affection to you, but if that person is beneficial to you, it is the worth that you show, kind of you cherish that thing. So it is rightly said in the Bhushanadeva's Bodhisattva Charyavatara that in terms of the second jewel, that is the jewel of Dharma, the state of cessation, it is not that this state of cessation is showing affection to you, but because of the attainment of this cessation, that you are being freed from samsara, it is because of this that you cherish, you start cherishing the state of cessation, the truth of cessation. And also, if you think about the precious human birth that you've obtained this time, so that is the result of your virtuous action that you've committed in your previous lifetimes. So, what kind of action, positive action, that you have done in the previous lifetime, which is responsible in giving you this precious human birth this time? So, all these virtuous actions that you've accumulated in the previous lifetimes, they are again done in relation to the sentient beings. So, say, you refrain yourself from killing someone else, refrain yourself from killing or stealing something from someone else. This means, again, that is in relation to sentient beings. As such, we see that even to achieve a fortunate birth, that is by way of dependence on other sentient beings.